Fulfilling Old Testament Prophecies, Commentary for the November 23, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Don't you believe that I am in the Father, and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me, who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. Or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. John 14, verses 10 and 11. I grew up in the kind of home that did not say grace before meals. Sometimes it is a mystery to me how someone with little religious family influence that bordered on anti-religion grew up to become a pastor. We always had neighbors who would take us to church with them, even though our parents did not attend. But that was not the primary influence that shaped my life. After all, of the four of us children, only two are church members today, and I am the only one who sought out a pastoral career. While I'm thankful today for those church-going members who took an interest in four neighborhood waifs, I did not become a member of any of those denominations. As I got a little older, I stopped attending church with neighbors because my time filled with activities with friends from school. We explored the local creeks and rode our bicycles all over the small town of Port Orchard. This kept us in fairly decent shape because the town was on two levels. There was the lower part where Bay Street ran along the waterfront of Sinclair Inlet. We explored the beach, fished from piers, collected clams, and even salvaged empty pop bottles from the water to redeem for deposits at the local grocery. While I spent time in the lower town doing these things and visiting the library, my family lived in the upper part of town, above three blocks of a steep climb up Sydney or Klein Avenues past the county courthouse. The ride to Lower Port Orchard was a breeze, but the slog back up to where we lived was a chore, especially with a load of library books on a sweltering summer day. These were days of freedom of movement and little accountability. Rarely did our parents seem to worry about where we were or what we were doing. That was normal for our friends as well. While that can be a recipe for mischief, we simply enjoyed riding our bikes and did not seek out trouble. We discovered a shallow patch of quicksand by one of the creeks, and once I fell from a tree into a large patch of stinging nettles. But surviving both experiences taught lessons in being aware of the environment. A few years later, one of my friends began attending youth meetings called King's Teens, sponsored by the local Nazarene church. The lure was a table of sweets to be consumed at the end of each meeting. When I saw that table, and since we did not eat like that at home, I made sure to come each week. This led me to accept Christ and put me on a different course in life. I began to test the reality of this God experience. One of the places I rode my bicycle to was a small local lake to meet my friends. When I was riding out there one day, a large vicious dog pursued me on the way. It was a terrifying experience, as he almost caught me except for an added adrenaline boost. Stray dogs are a common hazard for cyclists. I had been nipped before by small dogs that had come out of nowhere. I did not want to experience the bite of a dog as large as I was. I decided this was a perfect time to try prayer. I asked God to watch over and protect me on the ride back home. Anxiously, I set out, and the large dog was nowhere to be found along the way. I began to think maybe this God thing was real. Entering my mid-teens, money became a more important part of my life, and I learned I could make money by delivering papers on a newspaper route. There were two Seattle papers delivered in our town. One was the evening paper to be delivered after school. Most boys preferred that, so rarely did one of those routes come open. The other paper was a morning paper that required getting up very early to deliver the papers so people could read them with morning breakfast. Since getting up so early was not particularly appealing, there were always routes open for the morning paper. That is how I found myself getting up early to do my paper deliveries. Early rising was something I adjusted to. That was not the hardest part of the route. The most difficult part was the number of adults who could afford to buy a home and a car, but would stiff a poor newspaper boy 30 cents for their monthly subscription. To this day, I do not understand how people can be so mean, especially after an entire month of making sure they got their newspaper clean, dry, and timely. But I think everyone in business, whether large or small, learns a lot about the character of the people in their communities. I learned about cutting my losses and moving on. The most important lesson I learned happened early one Sunday. I always picked up my papers from a drop spot where they would be left by the company in two tightly bound bundles that I had to cut open to remove the papers. I would do one half of my route and then return for the other bundle to do the second half. I always counted all the papers, though, when I first arrived to make sure there was the right amount. Sometimes they would even include an extra or two as freebies the newspaper boys could use to solicit new accounts. But one morning, there were no freebies. And worse, I was one paper short for my customers. This was a major concern, as there was no way to obtain another paper to cover the loss. I did not want to lose a customer over a bundling error at the company. There was little I could do except deliver what I had. I took the first half and delivered those papers, all while praying that God would somehow make up the difference, fully expecting to find the right number of papers when I returned to the drop point. When I arrived back, I eagerly counted the papers, expecting a miracle. But my heart fell when I found the count had not changed. A little depressed and disappointed, I went to deliver the rest of my route. When I came to the last house, I had no more papers. But as I rode by, I saw a Sunday paper in their paper box. I praised God all the way home. But as I climbed into bed, I realized, since there were two Seattle papers and both had a Sunday edition, it might have been the competitor's paper. So I dressed and rode back to the house, went up on the porch, and pulled the paper from the box and verified it was the same edition I was delivering. While there may be an answer to what happened that I do not understand, to me this was an unexplainable miracle, and I began to trust in God's care and compassion for those who choose to follow him. Since then, I have experienced other miracles even more amazing to me. I have not seen people raised from the dead or anyone walking on water, but then I did not need to. I was already convinced. Based on my experience, it seems amazing to me that the miracles of Jesus were not enough to convince the religious leaders of his day that God had stepped into their lives in a very real, in the flesh, compassionate way. Their religion had become like dry bones. They were only interested in rules they could use to manipulate the adulation of the people. They did not understand that God is love, as in 1 John 4:8. They had a mountain of rules and ordinances that they policed, but never recognized that if God himself is love, then his entire kingdom is founded upon that and reflects his character. They worshiped the power God represented, believing it could deliver them from rule by foreigners. But my experience has taught me that God does not produce miracles to demonstrate his power. He does it to demonstrate his love. When King Herod demanded Jesus perform a miracle, he wanted to see a demonstration of power, according to Luke 23:8. Jesus provided none. In return, Herod mocked him and sent him back to Pilate. I have sometimes wondered if Herod had sought an act of compassion and grace, would Jesus have responded positively, as he did with the centurion who had a sick servant in Matthew chapter 8, verses 5 through 13. Jesus, for 3.5 years of ministry, stood in front of crowds and rulers, performing miracles of compassion one after another. Still, the people could not see the divinity flashing in every act of grace he did. Some today refuse to believe, to commit their lives to God's kingdom, because they do not see miracles in answer to every prayer. But the experience of Christ's ministry reveals that for those who do not want to believe, even miracles will not open their hearts. Twice, Matthew tells us that Jesus rebuked those who sought a sign from him out of their wicked and adulterous hearts, in Matthew 12, 39 and 16, verse 4. The only sign such people receive is a sign of Jonah, who was 3 days in the belly of the fish. In the same way, Jesus was crucified, entombed in the earth, and rose on the third day. But even then, those who choose not to believe are unwilling to commit to God's kingdom. As Jesus shared in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced even if someone rises from the dead. Luke 16, verses 19 through 31. Jesus continues to seek entrance for his compassion and grace into our hearts, according to Revelation 3, verse 20. Will we open ourselves to him? Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries, podcasts, articles, and links to books by the author at that website. Once again, it's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.